If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Gil, everything is on fire.
Oh, are you talking about just trying to set up this podcast? Because for the umpteenth time, to get a podcast working between two people who are in reality not that far away, given
same
the great state of the world, and it's just a case of like,
No one, the hello, entire Scott. Pandemic, hello. The entire pandemic, I thought we'd crack this. I thought there'd be some sort of way of guaranteeing you could do a remote conversation and just have it work. But no, phone signals, video signals, all the weird bitty stuff, but it's all right. I mean, this podcast is sponsored
right?
by Redfall.
Why is it all right? Why is it? Oh, because Redfall's here to save the day with its quality programming.
Well, yeah, because Redfall's also on fire and in bits and trying to work in a state that's not coming together very well. But yes, this is the Entitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP.
UBP!
The UBP! Where we take your latest talking points, latest questions, and whatever you want us to dive into in regards to anything, to be honest, usually gaming, but it can be whatever. A lot of people writing in about the state of Xbox this week. Yeah. Did I do our names, Scott Tilford, Jules Gill? I think I did.
Do you know what? By now, people either know us or they'll think that we're two idiots and they'll have already clicked off, mate. I mean, this is the thing. We are here for the experience, and
yes.
So too are our audience members who just love the ups and downs, the tumultuous nature of technology, and us just being absolute tits.
That's the speaking of all those things, have you been keeping up with all the Redfall stuff this week?
Oh, have I ever. With I'm drinking from a huge bowl of tea this time around, just going like, how deliciously. But to be honest, I have to actually say, Arkane Studios, I actually respect the heck out of them in terms of the games that they created, like the Dishonored franchise, is absolutely spectacular. And it is really harsh to see them be just getting miss after miss after miss with these games that they've been putting out. And it's actually quite a worrying state for Bethesda, because Microsoft has obviously invested all this money into them, and what have they actually got out of it recently? They've got nothing.
There's a weird thing, because a lot of people wrote in about the state of Xbox, because I forget which website did it, and I remember thinking when everything was going sideways the other day, I was like, someone's going to go with the headline, Xbox is done, Xbox needs to be shut down,
and
whatever.
And
we missed that, but we could have done that. I did a whole thing, we did stuff about like Redfall is another AAA disaster. I did a whole thing about, is the generation a disappointment so far, which are both on the YouTube, you can go find those things. But there is a lot of conversation around, you know, like considering the momentum that the original Xbox had, the 360, whatever, and then where we are now. A lot of people sending some questions in, just general talking points about the state of Xbox, the state of first party. You know, Thick Takes says, do we really need AAA games anymore? With indies being the most interesting and worthy financial and time investments all around, do you think most AAA games just aren't necessary? What do you think about, because this kind of goes alongside the whole thing that came out of the Competition and Markets Authority, the whole Xbox Activision deal, that obviously lots of games cost hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes.
Some of them balloon up towards $1 billion, the likes of GTA 6 or whatever. I think it's interesting that the top tier of games is actually maybe could go away. Like, what would we really miss?
I think that you've got to look at it this way. AAA games, as much as people will have huge issues with the way that they homogenize gameplay itself, try to copy each other, add in microtransactions and other shady marketplace practices, that money that they generate allows the funding of indie games under the umbrella companies and publishers that these larger companies have. Now, obviously, if you go to any of the sort of top-selling games, GTA 5 is still at the top there. all of the big names are there. You've got your FIFAs, you've got your wrestling games and stuff like that. Like, they aren't really offering anything new, but what they do offer is the salve of the people, effectively like the brainwashing, the opiate of the masses, in that you can sit down and play something that should be, in all theoretical assurances, a decent and easy game to like sort of just like churn through. Mm-hmm. Now, if you take that away, what you do is you divide gaming again. Gaming was brought together by these juggernauts, and without of like a unifying factor, I genuinely think that you will have people that are just disparaging gaming again. They'll say that it's for the nerds. They'll say it's for the elite. It will go back into the corners and the shadows of where we were across the sort of 80s and 90s. Like nowadays, gaming is so popular because it is so popular. And if we take away the top three juggernauts from that, what you're left with is kind of, yes, amazing storytelling games or beautiful gameplay things, but not enough eyes on it for it to be as popular as it would be.
That's interesting in terms of like the communal aspect or like the things, because the thing is, like, if you think about those games, I was talking about this with a few of my relatives, like the idea, like, what was the last game that brought everyone together? It's pretty much Elden Ring. Like, I don't feel like God of War even got that big. Last of Us, yeah, but I mean, like, yeah, I guess like, well, Last of Us 2, like, predates.
Oh, you mean the most recent one? Yeah, Elden Ring was, like, the unifying factor. Like, everyone was talking about it.
Yeah, that energy where, like, everyone is playing it. You go to work, you go to school, whatever it is, and everyone's playing something. And I feel like the last time that happened was Elden Ring. And I feel like a lot of people are sort of looking forward to Zelda, whatever, that's only on Switch. And it's, like, that whole conversation of, like, how many of those do we have in the pipeline? How many more things are coming that everyone's looking forward to? And, like, that idea of, like, when I said, like, oh, you know, could you take them away? I only mean the production level that we have, the amount of money that gets put into it.
Oh,
you could still have
the
marketing budget behind something like a Hi-Fi Rush or, like, something like a Sifu or whatever. Reduce the actual amount of money being thrown at these games, because Nintendo, for their version of AAA, like Zelda or whatever, that's not this big opulent over the top, you know, where they're spending forever getting skin textures.
Well, it's effectively
right,
an expansion pack, isn't it? They've got the framework already there. I'm not like trying to disparage it. I'm just saying that it's basically got the core mechanics already established by Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. And, like, obviously, that lets them save money too. But I think overall, even if you look to, like, you know, Mario Odyssey or something, there's no way that that thing costs as much as a God of War Ragnarok or a Suicide Squad or even Redfall. I mean, like, the whole thing with Redfall and the stuff that's coming out about that is that it was Arkane's game that they believed in. And Microsoft/Xbox kind of said, like, well, we don't see it. We don't think it's going to do very well. But cool. If you guys think it's got a future, sweet. And obviously, it's bombed. And so that's the whole thing that's happening around that. But I think it's that whole top tier thing. The gamble is so big. The money is so much that I would take that away. I would just reduce the echelon down a bit, more like the I wouldn't go that far back, but the 2000s generations or the early 2010s, when it didn't cost an arm and a leg just to put a vision together.
I guess what it is that it's trying to, they're all trying to create massive franchises. They're trying to put the work in first so that they can build on with sequels that just basically plug into it. They want that instant success, but all the work done now, rather than having to go, right, for the sequel, we need an even bigger budget to do all the extra bits that we couldn't do in the first game. Mm-hmm. But I totally agree. I think that there should be like a limitation on how much money does get spent on these games, because at the end of the day, fidelity is one thing, but do 99% of players actually see it outside of a photo mode? If you're that concerned with seeing like the reflection on a tiny puddle of water or having a rock have realistic geometry mapping sort of thing, then just apply that feature when you go into a photo mode. Like, have it like switch into like a higher texture pack when it goes into there. Like, it doesn't need to be in
the
gameplay.
Well, my thing is, like, the irony of that is that if the actual scope of the game was smaller, like Dead Island 2 looks phenomenal because it's not bothered about being a gigantic open world.
Is Dead Island 2 a good example because it had like 15 million years to be like made? Like, you know what I mean?
No, I just meant in terms of being able to polish a smaller, like, because obviously one of the biggest genres is open world games. One of the biggest, like, it's one of the biggest overall, projects you could possibly take on. So I just kind of mean if you reduce the scope overall, then you can do those little polishing techniques. You can do those little things that make it literally shine. Everything else.
I totally agree with you, and I think that there are some even like bigger games that you just look at and you go, that's just bloat, we don't need this in here. Like, for example, not to rag on Marvel Midnight Suns, because it's one of my favorite games of the last year. I think it's like actually still amazing. They've got a new DLC pack that's coming out for it, and I'm already getting like hyped for it. It's Storm's in it, so it's great. But the thing is that, like, would I have liked that game any less if they'd just taken out all of the Abby things of you doing all the social relationship building stuff? Absolutely not. I wouldn't wouldn't have cared one bit. Could have put right. that onto a Football Manager spreadsheet and it would have had exactly the same effect with me. And it would have saved me time walking around that stupid mansion area bit where you're just kind of like fumbly bumbly, like, oh, I'm running so fast. I've got to find me plants.
Like, it is very like, yeah, just random menial tasks.
But I think that how much money that would have saved if they didn't have to create all of the textures, the assets, like do all these puzzles, come to think of it like that. If they just boiled it down to a menu, I would have been just as happy with it. And there's so many other games like that where you just look at and think, was it necessary? Is the player getting something out of it? And when you can say, don't know, really, maybe atmosphere, then just get rid of it. Like, I'm sorry,
that's
man.
Like, it's just... It's almost like it is like a question of like focus over time. I mean, loads of the stuff that came out of the recent projects that BioWare put together, obviously Anthem kind of fell apart, Dragon Age is struggling a bit, and various leaders of different teams have left and everything. It is very hard, like leading a whole project like that for multiple years. But I feel like that, it's obviously we're simplifying a problem that is massively complex. But at the same time, the information is not there. Like in terms of like exposure to the video game making process, it's very rare that you actually get hands-on or eyes-on the big AAA project being turned around. It's such a big multifaceted problem. And obviously a lot of the game devs get annoyed that people have conversations like this and then, oh, they don't know anything. And it's like, no, we don't. I'd love to know way more. I wish
allow us transparency into your lives. Like, because if we got that, then maybe we'd be more understanding. Like, at the end of the day, I was watching, was it either Young Ye or Skill Up? I can't remember who it was this morning who were talking about.
Shout out to both.
They were talking about Redfall. And they were just saying, like, look, at the end of the day, I would rather that you put up a post on Twitter of a JPEG of you just saying, sorry, we're taking the L. We tried, we failed, we're moving on for the next one.
Which I think they have now done.
But because Arkane have just been like, oh, we want to support this game for like, this is going to be our biggest supported game. Everyone's like, no, don't do that. This isn't the one. Like, move on. Just accept it. It wasn't the one.
But that's the weird thing as well, is that at the end of all these massive dev cycles, it's like they can't be salvaged. There's something in there. There's something in the energy of a release like this when it drops and it face plants so hard where people just like go, no, I don't want it.
Yeah,
Avengers, Anthem, whatever. We don't want it to be salvaged. It worked with Cyberpunk because there was enough investment either in CDPR or in the anime that came back around.
Yeah.
That's managed to salvage itself. No Man's Sky managed to salvage itself because there was enough of a core there.
Do you know what it was? I think that the reason that Cyberpunk managed to carry on was because CD Projekt Red has a track history of showing people games that weren't perfect at launch and then went on to fix them. Like The Witcher, people often forget this. When it came out, it was not in a great shape. It took the Game of the Year edition for that to be an actual decently playable game.
They patched loads of Witcher 3.
Yeah, and I think that with No Man's Sky as well, the fact that they just said nothing and just went away quietly and did it, they didn't make a huge PR statement about, we're going to fix this game, because it was almost like you're adding more fuel to the fire at that point. But you know what you were saying before about actually salvaging a game? That reminded me of a game that is doing the rounds at the moment that is turning heads, had a small minuscule budget, and yet has the potential to be that game that you were talking about, and that's Dredge. Dredge is the game that could capture the cultural phenomenon if it was marketed and had a bigger budget of those AAA games. Mm-hmm. Because you see anyone talking about it, they have got nothing but good things to say about it. The atmosphere, the horror, the art direction, all of it looks, plays, sounds, is great, you know?
It's one of those games, like, we've talked about, me and Josh mentioned it on The Wind Up, which will be live by the time this podcast goes live.
Oh, I like your timey-wimey shenanigans.
I know, it's because we had a whole, technical gubbins with recording a podcast where we couldn't get it out the other day. But still, that'll be up by the time this goes live. But yeah, we're not sponsored by Dredge whatsoever, but every single person that I know is either playing it or has heard of it, or it is that game where someone's like, oh, I keep hearing about that, I should play it. And it's like that energy is what will carry something to a word of mouth success, like an Among Us or whatever, like a Fall Guys for a bit. And it's then on them to maintain it.
So the question is, what stops Dredge from being Redfall? I'm not saying like in terms of the failure, but Redfall was so hyped up. It captured so many people's attention. Is it because it just looked good, as in like the graphics were the thing? Because then we go back to the thing of, how do you actually market a game? Do you market it on the graphics or the gameplay? And it does seem that...
what am I buying the console for?
Yeah, the thing is, I'm not saying that like the general gaming public at large are silly people, but I'm just saying, when you look at the greatest selling games, there is a common homogeny between them where it's like, we're not going to challenge you. This is what you want. This is what you've paid for. And it looks great. It may be shallow as a puddle of sick when it comes to the gameplay, but you will puke your guts out about how good this looks.
Right. I think that's that's always the thing about refining gameplay over time. I think, I don't know what the highest selling game of all time is. It's something like Tetris or the original Mario or something. But yeah, I think that whole way of like, you know, what do you focus on kind of thing. The idea of Dredge replacing Redfall, if that was what Xbox got behind. I mean, they kind of did with the likes of Pentiment, Wild West or Weird West or whatever that game was called.
Yeah,
there have been a couple of recent games
they,
that were...
They always like downplayed it. They never said that this is the reason to buy an Xbox because it is an exclusive or this is thing. Like, and Pentiment does look amazing, but there's just, I don't know, they always
that's not going to make you get a Series X.
I don't know, they always market it in a way that is kind of like, we have Halo, we have Gears of War, we have Game Pass, and we've also got these little indie titles that you can just like faff around with for a bit. And that's the problem, is that Microsoft needs to step up and say like, look, the PC is the home of modding, of communities, and of most people's like work and game relationships. Let's make that the focus. Let's say like these indie games that are coming out, we're not even going to call them indies anymore. We're going to call them like the superstars, the reason to buy an Xbox.
Well,
like they may not look or push the graphics engine of your console to the limits, but the gameplay will be unique. It will be bespoke to you.
That's why I think they're in a weird like quagmire with this, because they've sold what they're marketing as the most powerful console in the world or whatever, but they don't have a single game that can show it off. No Microsoft games are on Game Pass, like other than the obviously the ones that are out right now, but like the ones that people talk about, Pentiment, even Hi-Fi Rush, like that's not them. That's what they bought. That was Tango Gameworks and Bethesda.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it's that whole thing where it's like, what have I bought this system for? And I think that
So you think they've marketed it wrong by using that? Well, it's because obviously like Sony had like the For the Players campaign with the PS4? Or was it the PS3?
Yeah. It's kind of carried over, but it's PS4 is where it came
kind of. But like, like with that, with Microsoft, because they were just like tech, people now expect it to be the next mind-blowing thing. And that's probably why Redfall got the imagination captured, because it was just like, it looked on paper amazing. It could do
what's well, Arkane's next thing. Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas like, if they had just gone the other way and just said like, no, the console is going to be the home for bespoke gaming, for that curated tale that is just, you're never going to find anywhere else.
Well, that's the selling point of Game Pass, but it's weird because that clashes. Like that, for me, the perfect version of a game in terms of budget, production, turnaround, whatever, is pretty much Hi-Fi Rush. Where like it's you know, it's beautiful, it's memorable, it shadow drops, and there's no expectations. People just check it out because they already have access to it because it's on Game Pass. They give it a shot. It's brilliant. It plays really well, and it's very recommendable. And it's designed to be completed. It's not designed to leech you for the next half a year with microtransactions and whatever.
Oh, which Redfall again is going to do?
Feels like that kind of game. Whereas Hi-Fi Rush feels like a video game. Doesn't feel like a life choice to play it every single day or whatever. And so, but I think that jars with like, you know, how big of a production can you put on those games to make it that they're really eye-widening, eyeball-turning games? Yeah. Or do you go down the humble route and just say, look, this is a curated thing. Every month you get something and keep your eyes on Game Pass because we'll have something brilliant every month.
Yep.
That also jars with the big AAA, we're building up to this, guys. You know, Starfield is their next thing. And it's just, to me, the approach doesn't work.
Do you think that it's because as the budgets escalate, there's kind of like, you know, you have like Kickstarter tier systems where it's like once you pledge an amount, you get this and blah, blah, blah. Do you think it's like the inverse thing for game development where it's like, okay, we're going to spend $100,000 on your game. You must deliver us this sort of type of game, a bespoke kind of like unique storytelling experience. But we're going to now give you $1 million to it. So that means you've got to figure out ways of making that money back quicker. And that comes with the attachments of, well, how do you make money back in this day and age? Oh, we've got to add microtransactions. We've got to make it a live service game. We've got to do this. I genuinely think that games like Suicide Squad and Redfall started out very different on paper. Like,
that's
I can imagine that it was like
a
spiritual successor to Left 4 Dead or something like that would have been the core concept. Or Suicide Squad would have been like a multiplayer Batman Arkham game. Like, those things sound brilliant in that single sentence. But as soon as you're trying to extrapolate them with the budgets that they require to make them happen, or because the publishers say you need to make this amount of money with this project, you start having to make concessions for it. And that's where every game ends up feeling the same, because everyone just goes, well, that worked here. We have to make our game work. Therefore, our game has to be that game.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs.
Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think as well, the longer the whole thing that's emerging around Redfall is that it has been in development, I think, for 5 years. I think it started in 2018.
And that's going to just expire the budget. Exactly. 5 years is not, I know it's a fairly short-ish time for development in the grand scheme of thing, but at the end of the day, every single year that passes, somebody's going to be saying, right, well, that is another bill you've got to pay.
Plus, if that fails, imagine putting 5 years of your life into a project and it fails in, what, an hour? Like, I mean, saw Redfall, it was immediately dead.
Yeah. I hate the fact that there are developers, artists, people who are programmers that have worked countless hours, probably gone through crunch culture, because let's face it, it has not gone away just because we're not talking about it. Mm-hmm. And they're probably just sitting there going, well, thanks for absolutely crapping on every bit of work that I've done, all because it just didn't mesh together well at the end, or because somebody decided to pull the trigger on this earlier than it was ready to go.
That's always been my wider thing with gaming when I talked about exposure to the creation process. Like, games are on fire until the last closing months of development, if you're lucky. Like, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I mean, God of War, like, Corey Barlog talked about how that game was an absolute mess until about 2 months before launch, the 2018 reboot, and where all these disparate parts don't knit together until they explicitly do right at the close of development, because everyone's making all these different bits. And I'm like, that's the thing that the public need to know, because it's like, you need to change all the marketing stuff. And I would factor the public into the making of a lot more. Like, you get a lot more making of movie trailers, you get early glimpses of stuff. It should always be the thing, I think I've mentioned this on podcasts and stuff, but it should always be the thing that people are looking, are hoping you're going to hit it. You remove pre-order culture altogether, and you just, you know, you try and hope to hit this target. And even if it fluctuates, at least people know what they're expecting.
Yeah, totally agree. Do you remember when EA put out the new skate making of or Where We Are trailer or like even just featurette, it basically just said, like, it's coming, it's here, it is not ready. And they showed all of like the gameplay issues that they had with it. And that was so endearing to see a company not present a polished and ready for play spectacle or a fake slice of life trailer that just will never live up to what the game was going to be. It was reality. I then looked at the recent gameplay trailer that they put out where they're talking about parkour and how you can use that to traverse the level. And because the animations in there are so absolutely wonky and janky, I didn't even draw attention. I didn't even register that was a problem, because they had informed me that this was still a work in progress, that it was not the be-all and end-all. Yeah.
Yeah, if you were going to, that's unfinished, guys, they'd be like, I know. That's literally what we're telling you.
We told you this. Like, it's not ready to go yet.
I am curious how much the average person, the average gamer, the average consumer would respond to that stuff. But that would be one of my solutions to the overall problem of scope creep or things getting bigger and bigger. Like, you try and keep your... The thing is, like, the worst version of it is Star Citizen. That game is still in development and that keeps getting things bolted onto it. And they've tried to be, well, in theory, they've tried to be open about what they're doing, but they just, the amount of money that thing has taken and stringing people along along. I don't know, but I just feel like there is a problem at the AAA space. I feel like things take way too long and they fail way too fast and way too hard.
I'm not going to like have 100% of the blame put on the publisher and developer, though. In a rare turn, I am going to say that we too are part of the problem. I'm not saying that you and I personally, I'm just saying that there is a reactive gamer mentality that comes out where if something isn't the best thing since sliced Jesus, it is the worst thing. And review bomb scores with negative press tours, with people doing rage bait click stuff like it's for the views. I do think that there is a cycle of hate that can generate out of small problems. Now, Redfall, admittedly, the people who worked on it do not deserve the hate because they tried their bloody best. No one sets out to make a bad game unless you are an asset flipping monster. But at the end of the day, they have released a bad game. Mm-hmm. Now, what we should be doing is saying, this is a bad game, it deserves all the critique, but at the end of the day, people behind it do not deserve any of the hate. And we too, as a community, should be looking at it and saying, hey, Arkane, let's not burn your offices to the ground just yet. Let's see if you can actually fix this. Because this game may not be for me, it may not be for you, it may not be for the masses out there, but I do believe that they deserve the chance to put their game out to the marketplace, to the vision that they originally had it.
That's the interesting bit, because that's when I mentioned before, No Man's Sky salvaging itself, Cyberpunk salvaging itself. Those games, to me, especially No Man's Sky, had a core that was worth refining and showcasing. There was always something there. That's the question on Redfall: is there anything there?
Have anything good? Yeah. Is there a kernel of truth within this sort of thing?
Because I always find that, like, there are, like you said, the hate bandwagon stuff. There's obviously a lot of clicks in that. We're very much going to take advantage of that as well. It is just the business of it to some degree. But like you said, without going too far, it's not like we're slagging off developers in the video. It's very much about the game, the product. But it's always that thing of like, what can be turned around? And I always think that part of the cycle, it does start with the, oh my God, this thing sucks, what the hell? Let's kind of laugh about it, how ridiculous this is, and hope that it gets fixed. We at least will cover stuff in underrated games, overlooked games, whatever. There's always that part of the cycle where enough people go, this thing wasn't actually that bad. All this thing's fixed now. Yeah. And it kind of comes back around. But only with the games that have those salvageable cores. And I just wonder if this does. I don't think it does. I'm yet to actually play it, but looking at the hands-on stuff, I watched that Skillup review as well, where he was just saying, like, I would rather you guys moved on because there's not a core to refine here. That's fascinating that Xbox first party got there, but obviously they bought it, so it's not like a, you know, it wasn't from the ground up Xbox kind of thing. Next question, we'll change tact a little bit.
Okay.
Question from Mouse Hands, who says, hello, metalheads. My wife and I are going to go to a big metal concert next week. Necrogoblicon. What a pick.
Mate, Necrogoblicon are amazing. It's one of those bands. Well, I was like, sorry, I will get back to the question. I'll just say, the first song that I heard of theirs was the one where the goblin character is trying to date a woman at work and he gets bullied by like this other guy. And so he takes it upon himself after drinking too much shots, in which there is a montage of him slamming shooters like he's like playing drums, like blah, 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 blah. He then goes and kills him in the parking lot, and at the very end the woman comes out to see the mangled corpse of her sort of romance partner from The Office, and he turns to her and just goes, shrugs and goes, eh? So good.
So he says, got my shirt picked out, ear protection, and I've been stretching. Do you have any pre-concert rituals or advice for concert goers over 30?
Ooh, that is a tough one, because you know what?
Ear protection is definitely something.
As soon as you get to 30, man, every bone in your body just goes, like, oh, I want to break now. And every ligament in your knees just goes, like, nah, give it up. I've given you 30 years of sitting down, mate.
Yeah, I haven't woke up without an ache in years. And I'm going to be 34, like, in July. But I don't really have, like, pre-concert rituals. I sort of just throw myself into it, and then I get the like thing in your ears for like the days after.
You don't even use ear protection?
I don't. I never
did.
I was always like,
come on.
Well, that's the thing.
This is big light energy here again.
But I was like, well, but surely there's a governmental reason to not ruin all of our ears. Why is that? Why is it that loud if it's actually going to do you damage?
Dude, it's giving you tinnitus. Like you should not be messing around with your ears, dude. Like at the end of the day, like it reminds me of that scene of Man to Man with Dean Lerner when Richard Ayoade says, like, I've got terrible tinnitus. It sounds like this, but less sarcastic.
See, the thing is, no, but like I genuinely don't understand that. Why do we have to wear it? Surely it's on the health and safety people to not blow our ears out.
Do you think they actually care? Like,
well, they should. Legally, they have to.
What are you going to do? Say, I went deaf at a Def Leppard concert. Like, oh, the irony. Like, it's just,
I am the Def Leppard.
It's just one of those things where I'm not entirely sure that the your personal health and safety has been really accounted for at these metal gigs where they literally try to play as loud and as fast as possible. Do yourself a favor, just next time, just pop the little foamies in, man. Like right. I'm not trying to be a prude on this, but it's like I went to enough gigs when I was young and all of my friends, like they actually, no, Kerry doesn't wear them, but well, she has tinnitus. So... She has tinnitus. So like, things are like, I'm right.
Well, my thing is, I want to hear the best sound quality possible. Surely putting the little foamies in
Go listen to them on CD then, mate. What are you doing?
Well, no, but I want to see them live. But I just like, I don't, surely putting little foam things in means that it's like muffled. Like if I was talking to you through foam.
Yeah, right. Like, it does give it like a noise gate sort of thing. And it does change
sense.
But at the end of the day, are you really, and I'm not saying that, I'm saying this with peace and love, mate. Are you really missing out much? Do you have like a musical ear? Are you the next like Tchaikovsky where you've got like this perfect pitch thing? Like you just know. Because if not, and you aren't like well-tuned and well-trained,
I've not tried this yet. For me, if I'm paying money to see a band live that I love, like Alter Bridge or whoever, yeah. I want to see them. I want to hear them. I don't want to muffle it. For me, it seems counterintuitive to go see a band live and then reduce the ability, the live music.
But you're watching the experience and you're feeling it. Like, I don't know. I wear, that's what it sounds like. And the thing is, I don't actually feel like I miss out anything at all. I love going to gigs and I am very much a case of if there is like a massive pit there, I may get involved. Like I'm a fairly tall guy. I can usually handle myself. But recently, because I'm older, I've just been like, okay, let's have a scout around the venue. Do I know it well? Do the people that I'm going with know this venue well? Where's the best place to stand to both see and hear that requires me to do absolutely no movement whatsoever apart from nob my head? Because we went to go and see Alexis on Fire in, God, I can't remember which venue it was in Cardiff. But that was great because everyone that that I went with found this perfect thing where the lip of the first, level was right down there. So the music basically just like hits the top of that, angles itself down effectively. So you're just standing there, perfect audio quality. You can see the entire stage. No one's around you. And I was just like, oh, this is brilliant. Now I can just have a good old sing-along.
There is definitely a wider conversation to be had about the expectations of a gig. When you're a kid, it's like all your expectations are based off like movies and stuff. And it's like,
I just want to get to the front,
do whatever. And like, I've always kind of done a mix of those things. But these days I'll take just standing to the side. As long as I'm close enough to make sure that's actually them, the people I know playing. That's always my golden rule. What have I paid for? Because if I'm at the back, it could be anybody. So I'm always like, I want to be at front enough so I can actually see stuff. And also because I play guitar, I want to maybe try and learn something from the guitarist. Maybe learn like, oh, that's actually how they play that or whatever. So like that's me, but yeah, I've not ever worn ear protection, which is I don't think I should need to.
Okay, well my ritual would be meet up with your friends at least an hour and a half before the gig, get some food in you, get a pint or two then go to the venue. I would say the ritual should be make sure you see at least one of the supporting acts because you never know. You may find them. I have not found anyone decent recently, if I'm honest, but I'm just saying, at least give them a try.
Yes. That was always the thing where I was like, oh, you have to go to the supporting act because then you can get further to the front and then you're already at the front when the main band comes on. I'm too old, like I'm too crusty for like most gig stuff where like there's always someone with two drinks trying to get past you in that awkward shuffle.
I hate all that
stuff so much now. I've done it way too much. They always want to do it during the guitar solo, so I can't watch anything. I'm a proper old man about it where it's just, I'm just too annoyed.
My favorite one is that you bring people because like you and I, we're fairly tall, like, and it's a case of just like you always have shorter friends, so you go to a gig and you stand there and the other tall people will always stand in front of the shorter of your friends. It's like, dude, stand in front of me, I can at least see a little bit more than that. But it's like one of our friends, Kat, she basically, whenever she goes there, she's like, can't see anything because she's like, 5 foot nothing. She's just like, yep, okay, cool. I love seeing the back of these people's shirts.
What was your sweatiest gig? What was the most you ever carried away?
I went to go see Horror. HO9909, and I had the best time of my life, but that was just you were fighting for your life at 24/7, man. You were just punching, kicking, biting, you were gnawing on the acrid air, the sweat that was just like flying around. I felt like Pac-Man. I was just like
that thing where the air becomes like solid, where it's just like, because I saw Bring Me the Horizon on the Sempiternal tour at my university at the time. I don't know if I mentioned this on a podcast before, but that was the sweatiest gig by far. Everyone's shirts were a second skin and we could barely see the band.
At the in Exeter there used to be a a venue called The Cavern, which could hold a maximum of like 30 people. It was like the most lo-fi grungy. It was literally underground as well, hence the name.
I can be
and
heaven,
so
to be
it
honest.
Was hot to begin yeah. with. And I remember just like, I remember this is back in the day when I used to have hair. Not only did right. I have hair, but I had a mohawk as well. I mean, that's,
oh, what? You should
yeah,
bring that
yeah,
back.
Yeah, yeah, try that, mate. Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
What can I do? Just what's
tape it on.
Who's the guy? Mate, his name's escaped me now, but he's got a, like Sean a skullet. like I think.
Okay.
but basically, I was there dancing. And I could feel, even with like the industrial strength glue that I'd used to stick up these spikes, that it was like fading and dripping down. And by the end of the night, my sweat was so sticky because of the hair gel and like the stiffening thing, sort of agents in it. I was just there like, oh my God, my face.
You just glued all your one giant friendship group. You'll leave as one because you
so
all arrived together.
Man. So stanky.
we will wrap the podcast right now. We've both got loads of stuff on. So apologies for a bit of a shorter podcast this week. And a massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions. We'll do a rollover for next week because yes. we had loads of different things.
Because otherwise, right now, it looks like we've only had three questions and we've just tried yes. to stretch them out. That is not the case. People
Don't
have been
point
very,
it out,
very
Jules. Look, we had lovely big in-depth questions for that first one. But yeah.
We should say as well, thank you very much, PG Quips, because
yeah,
every single week we come in, there is a meme and a half that makes us do a big old belly laugh. And this week's one was brilliant. So thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, genuinely, massive shout out to PG Quips, always in the feed. If anyone else wants to laugh, go check out the stuff that's in the response tweet thread, because there's some great stuff in there. But a massive thank you to everybody. Like I said, we'll roll these over next week, providing nothing else ridiculous happens in the industry.
I'm looking we'll just... at my calendar, mate. I am here uh-huh. next Friday.
Good,
I'm here,
finally.
Ready for it.
We will do a full-on Friday. Providing no other games burst into flames, we will get to everyone else's questions in a week's time. But genuinely, massive thank you to everybody. This has been the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP.
I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Jules Gill.
I have indeed. And remember, next Thursday, we'll be putting out the call for questions, where you can check out Scott or myself's Twitter handles at RetroJ with a zero for me, or you can follow @LP89 for Scott.
Be beautiful. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.